Please do be seated. So, I often say that when I stand up here, I use this as often as a confessional, as a pulpit. So I'm going to start. If any priest ever says to me, "So how long is it since your last confession?" I just have to think, how long is it since I last preached? My confession this week is I have a thing for dance. Hang on. I may have done this before, but it's great that you can't see my footwork. Cha-cha-cha, one, two, cha-cha-cha, one, two, cha-cha-cha. Thank you. I even had the hips going then. You can't see it, I'm so sorry. Sometimes there's a reason to dance. I actually do have a little reason for a celebratory dance today, and that is I'm very proud to announce that we have within our community, and our community is here for the good things and the more difficult things, but we have a good thing to celebrate today, and that is that we have an inaugural member of the Order of the Diocese of British Columbia in Penny Holt, who's hiding away at the back. And it's, for those of you that don't know, there's a short write-up in the bulletin for this week, but it's a celebration of those who give to the church and continue to give to the church, both in their own parish life and in the wider church. And so we give thanks not just for Penny, who has been a great asset to the life of St. John's and other parishes and to the diocese, but for all those who will be inaugurated on October 20th at 10:30 a.m., to which you are all invited to this celebration of ministries, lay ministries, particularly within the church, and it will take place at the cathedral. There are details in the bulletin. So a reason to dance, and I sometimes describe myself as a dancer, which is a new thing. It's not quite true. I confess, in the last year, been to more dance shows, contemporary and student dance shows, and I've taken ballroom dancing lessons. And I've taken ballet bar, two courses of ballet bar. Plié, thank you very much. It's great that you can't see how bad my technique is. And I've spent more hours than you want to imagine, because it's not a pretty thought, dancing around the living room to the latest hits. I've even been to see a couple of bands with which dancing was the order of the day, including A Tribe Called Red, an indigenous dance group in Vancouver a few months back. Which puts me in good company, scripturally, kind of. According to two of our three readings this Sunday, and I was sad to miss Sermon Circle this week, because I would have been interested to see what they made of this. But certainly when we try and see if there's a link between the three readings, you can get a definite one of dancing out of our Hebrew scriptures and our gospel for today. It does seem, however, that dancing can be a little bit dangerous. David was despised by the daughter of Saul, Michal, who also happens to be married to David. She's described in one commentary as a gift of Saul to David, which I'm not terribly keen on, but she was one of David's wives. And what David is doing in the story that we heard as he dances in front of the Ark of the Covenant is that he's laid aside his royal robes, and he's dressed in something which is essentially a religious garb, probably not very dressed, because an ephod just covers this bit, and he's wearing a linen ephod, and it's a very deliberate statement that David is making to lay aside all the trappings of office and to worship God with all, it says in the text, all of his might. His conduct, though, is seen as unbefitting of either his age or his station, a bit like watching the rector dance, by Michal, and maybe by others along the route too. But David is expressing his unfettered joy at the return of the Ark of the Covenant to the city of Jerusalem. It's an act of thanksgiving, an act of celebration, an act of worship and devotion and of praise. So the important question is, when was the last time you danced before the Lord? No, maybe that's not the one to get from this sermon. Because I confess again, I've seen enough of the Anglican two-step and indeed joined in enough of the Anglican two-step, which is the technical name for that uncomfortable shuffle that people give when there's a slightly upbeat hymn in an Anglican church. I've seen enough of that to last me a lifetime, and I've done enough. But that sense of abandon, that freedom to express and engage with the divine, is something we can all aspire to. In whatever way works for us, silence or dance, singing, poetry, playing music, laughing, weeping, serving, loving. They all give us ways of seeing and feeling and knowing and meeting God. Which does beg a more serious question. How much do we, and I mean you and I, have that sense of abandon to the faith which we claim? How much do we give ourselves, all of ourselves, to the values which are at the heart of our faith life, the dance of faith? It's not just about worship. And fear not, I will not be installing a mirror ball at St. John's anytime soon, or playing some pumping tunes through the sound system. Well, no more pumping than David manages with some aplomb most Sundays. It's not just about self-help. It's not just about realizing ourselves or some kind of self-affirmation. Freeing ourselves to live the values of our faith is about our part in the work of the healing of the world. That sense of abandon, of giving heart, soul, body, and mind to our faith, is one which calls us to leave behind those things that prevent us fully living as we are called to live. It calls us to be wholly committed to the work of justice, inclusion, welcome, and affirmation, to the work of reconciliation, and to the work of healing. The wholeness which our Hebrew forebears called shalom, that state of wellness for the whole world based on love, fairness, healing, and grace. We see this referred to in our Hebrew scripture for today as a kind of metaphorical shorthand, as following the celebrations and the abandon of the dance and the sacrifices and the ritual, David distributes food to all who are there, meat and bread and the sweetness of raisin cake, symbols of provision for all within the ritual life and the life and faith of Israel. This place of abandoning ourselves to the dance of faith is a liberating place to be, where we discover who we are meant to be, who we are called to be, where we recognize Christ working in us and in our community, when we recognize Christ found in others, in all others, where we recognize the Christ who infuses all of creation. This place is transformative, it is life-giving, and it's really, really dangerous. As we look at the theme of the dance in our gospel story today, we see the consequence of the commitment to faith. For we see in John the Baptizer, whose gruesome end comes as the result of the dance of Herodias' daughter, we see in him someone dedicated to the proclamation of justice to the extent that he loses his life. There is so much within this story that could be unpacked. The real impotence of a puppet king, the misuse of the young to deal with adult issues, both the lasciviousness of Herod and the scheming of Herodias, neither come out well. The way in which Herod did not wish to lose face, having made an extravagant gesture and seems to have painted himself into a corner. And ultimately, the loss of John the Baptist due to his fearless proclamation of justice and his prophetic calling. I can't do more, really, than make reference to these things here, but I'm reminded just how much substance can be found in only a small section of our scriptural texts, Texts that we often allow to wash over us Sunday by Sunday, they contain vast amounts upon which we could meditate, pray, study, and reflect, which is why we place the references for the following Sunday in each Sunday bulletin week by week, and why we consider the readings every week in our sermon circle. But I digress. As we see in the text, Herod had thrown John into prison because John was not afraid to proclaim that Herod was morally bankrupt. And John challenged the puppet king's leadership. John refused to back down and continues to do what prophets, justice proclaimers do, to denounce injustice and infidelity. And Herod throws him into jail and yet takes no further action, seeing something in John that prevents him from doing anything more. So when Herod's stepdaughter, under her mother's guidance, makes her request for John's head, Herod is deeply grieved. An unexpected outcome of his thoughtless extravagance, offering her anything he wanted. We heard in the passage that Herod had often talked with John and was clearly intrigued by him. And Herod was also somewhat afraid of the prophet, of this wild man who was no respecter of persons and said exactly what he thought. But for Herod, these consequences, these considerations were not as powerful as the thought of losing face in front of his friends, and the execution goes ahead. But Herod's conscience, we read at the beginning of today's passage from St. Mark, his conscience troubled him. For after John's beheading, when he hears about Jesus, Herod is terrified that this new prophet is in fact John the Baptizer come back to life, as we heard in the preamble to today's story. But what I particularly want to draw attention to in this account is that John's abandonment to the life of God leads him to paying the greatest price. We may not have such a cost to pay, but in our standing up for that which is right, we are challenged to consider our own reliance on the God who gives us strength. We are challenged to consider our own abandonment to the will of justice that is the will of God, whether we have the confidence and the abandon to stand up for that which is right in the name of and in the power of God. May we, in our dance of faith, be inspired and free to give ourselves to it with complete abandon.